Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And Ray has been working a lot more harder than I have been on Tabletop Simulator. And tell me how far you've gotten so far this week.
Well, with a little free time I have, I've managed to get to the point where I can select all the armies for the list for the battle scribe to TTS, but without me jumping onto YouTube and watching videos, I haven't quite figured out how to take that list and then put it onto a table for a game.
I remember there's a way to save it to a folder, but it sounds like you already tried that, so I'm not sure either. I have to resort back to those videos as well. So I have not gotten a chance to even touch tabletop since our last recording. And originally I was going to get some hobbying done this week and then went to open the closet door where I carry all my stuff in the hobby room. And the door came off in my hands. So I spent most of my hobby time fixing the door. So the door is fixed. So yay, hobby handyman me. But hobby time is definitely been pushed aside for one more week. But that's okay. Got some ideas. Got some news for those of you who checked our Facebook page. So we were trying to figure out what the release dates of all this stuff is. But I got this courtesy of the Facebook group for Harlequins that the next issue after the Death Watch White Dwarf has the Harlequin rules in there, as noted on the cover. The question we've got to figure out is, okay, the current issue available on Games Workshop's website is the Saga of the Beast. So we still don't have a release date for, I guess, would be 453 would be the issue with Death Watch in it. And then 454 would be the issue with the Harlequins in it. So when all those are actually coming out and becoming available to the public, I have no idea. So trying to figure that part out. Obviously, at this point, they'd be for digital download only, if you're most likely one of our many listeners, because most of our listeners are indeed in Canada and the North America region. Although Games Workshop had talked about reopening their stores amid the coronavirus, it is not available in our local area. So those of you in Europe may be seeing some limited delivery options, which we are quite envious of this point. So congratulations there. So we'll see. I'm trying to be patient. I know this is probably for the better of the society at this point. But in the meantime, let's hope we can get this over with as soon as possible, as I'd like to get back to some sort of normalcy, but also do so in a safe manner. So, among other things, I am rocking the COVID-19 mop. My God, I need a haircut badly. Other crazy thing has been watching a ton of movies with the kids. I've come to a conclusion that the new Gosgul model, who's on the cover of the issue for White Dwarf 454 with the Harlequin rules, is it me or does he look like Metalbeard from the Lego movie?
I've never seen the Lego movie.
Oh, jeez. All right. So those of you who have seen the Lego movie, let us know on our Facebook page. Do a side-by-side. Who wore it best, Godskull or Metalbeard? So you could probably argue that Metalbeard is the Privateer Press version of Godskull. Maybe that's it. But I was looking at it today. I was like, oh my gosh, that's the new Godskull. That's pretty funny. How about you? Any other hobby progress this week, Ray?
No, not as of yet.
Getting caught up a few other content producers, got some interesting information. So nice to hear that some people are also struggling with this. But don't get me wrong, very thankful that able to work at this point. That seems to be a bigger issue as this drags out a lot longer than most people anticipated. So continue with that. All right. So yeah, luckily, Ray, you said you found a better map for a tabletop. So it has some more of the bells and whistles we are used to.
Oh, yeah. So it's got buttons you can press for the deployment type, buttons you can press for the mission type. It's got a scorecard on there. It does have a countdown timer, but it's not a chess clock. There's only one, at least that I could tell. It's pretty much what you see in like the tournaments that are happening using it right now, such as its Tactical Tortoise, which I saw posted a video yesterday, which actually had Don playing against someone playing Thousand Suns. I haven't watched it all the way through. But it's kind of interesting because Don was playing a Rhino Rush Death Guard army, and the other person was playing Thousand Suns list that had an okay amount of rubrics, some Scarab Occult Terminators, a few cultists, and the kind of HQs you'd expect.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because that's one thing we're going to talk about in our faction focus. If you dialed back a year ago, it'd been like 100% like Zangors and almost no rubrics.
Yeah.
So how did Don do, and how did the game play out?
Well, again, I didn't actually watch it all the way through. I stopped watching it about halfway through just because I had to take care of some other things. But I will say this. Watching that video, I can definitely see the potential that 40K has for being played over Twitch, the Twitch streams and things along that nature. With the right kind of camera equipment and the right people talking and keeping an eye on what's going on, it's really useful. Now, I don't think we'd be able to specifically, just use, constantly using tabletop as useful as there are for facts like that.
Right.
As far as like the kind of things you need to do for an actual game, I can see I'm starting to see the potential that I didn't see before.
Okay. You mentioned you need better lighting. So you said not using tabletop, but just using the Twitch stream by itself?
Yeah. So you can't just have everybody doing a tournament and then the ones that you'd want to show be on Tabletop Simulator. Because the one thing I've heard over and over again is that Tabletop Simulator takes longer than an actual game does. There are shortcuts, but okay. There are parts of it that take longer. So it's used. What it does, what I am saying though, is if you can have a setup that has kind of a free flowing ability of the camera to maneuver around the top of the table from above,
mm-hmm.
It can do a lot more than what you see right now, which is a couple angles, but constantly from a distance and static.
That's true. When you look at most of the Twitch things, the cameras are kind of fixed, and only a few of them have like they can rotate the position a little bit, but it's not really a free form. Yeah, you're right. Okay. Do you think because the games take longer, is that more the learning curve and learning tabletop, or is that just the way the game works?
I honestly can't say for sure yet. I don't know that it's been played enough by the people that I watch to say. And it might be a question for Don, who unfortunately can't join us yet again. But I think part of it is the fact that you only have so much control over what you're doing. Every once in a while, there's an issue with the physics engine where you're trying to put something up against a wall and it decides that you're trying to put it on top of the wall. Or even on like little pieces that it decides it can stand on. You have this model that's just standing in midair for no reason at all. I have seen that. One of the interesting things I saw in the game Don was playing against the Thousand Suns is the Rubric Marines were scaled wrong, so they were smaller and ended up basically being on 25mm bases as opposed to 32. Now, it's easy enough to fix.
Okay.
You can adjust the scale, but those are the kinds of things that just can kind of happen. And when you have those,
interesting,
affect the, what your measurements would be.
Right. Huh. Okay. I'm intrigued at this point. So, yeah, I'd be curious to see how they can learn from this experience. Maybe this, I keep thinking back. I know it's a sports metaphor. Not everybody's going to get it. But several years ago, in the National Hockey League had a major meta shift. And although it meant that some bad teams could become very competitive, it was a terrible product to watch. And basically what it came down to was, it's called the neutral zone trap. And basically it was a very, you didn't have to spend a lot of money on high profile, prolific scorers, because you could just take anybody who could skate, and you'd play like a shell defense. And it was terrible to watch. It was just so boring to watch. The New Jersey Devils were the first to come up with it, and only a few teams could figure out how to crack it. But for the most part, it allowed them to really dominate the NHL for those few years. And it was horrible to watch. And consequently, viewership went down, which meant money went down. And everybody was like, we got to fix this. And of course, like in 40K, when a bunch of people get around and say, well, how are we going to fix this? Everybody argued for a long time. And that led to a lockout and a strike. And basically, that year, there was no professional hockey. People think, oh my God, wow, that's terrible. It actually turned out to be the best thing that ever happened, because they actually sat back as, if everything's on the table, let's reinvent our sport. And they've since have rebounded and have seen steady growth in terms of both product on the ice as well as leadership. And a lot of that had to do with some of these basic game terms, which you know, which us on 40K are used to, like missions and points limits and stuff like that, but also how the game was broadcasted. So it's very interesting to see that maybe this COVID-19 is the pause we needed to make competitive 40K where it needs to be in terms of taking off to the next level. Because as is with the ITC, there really isn't an off season. I mean, that last game of the year is the LVO, and then that very next Sunday is the first RTT. If you're there at LVO, they have this, you know, small RTTs that they have, and that's technically the first game of the next season. So you literally have like 8 hours of off season. Maybe that's a bad idea. Maybe we should take some time. Because that's one thing, you remember the new ITC missions came out, 6 weeks after LVO? So there were actually some tournaments that played in the 2020 season with the 2019 missions. So kind of weird. I don't know. Just a thought, food for thought. But, you know, when you start seeing this and the technology and all that, I know for our tournament, which we have news on, one of the things I was looking at is these handheld gyroscope type things to have a steadier hand, and then having people being able to take video of the tables without having, you know, having some movement without looking like a blind man on a pogo stick trying to take footage. So, you know, kind of minimize the Blair Witch effect. So that's some of those things there. So I don't know. I think that's a great idea, and I'm glad they're coming up with some of these ideas. And I was kind of hoping I'd have more time to experiment with it, but alas, we have a little more time. So we'll see if we can get that done the next few weeks. So, and then last but not least, yes, I do have an announcement. Unfortunate for our big tournament, Scorched Earth Open. Originally, it said we had postponed it to Labor Day weekend. And unfortunately, in speaking with the venue and some of the other event organizers that we're teaming up with, the venue cannot guarantee that they'll be open by then and be ready by then. So for us to accept money and tickets and travel arrangements for players to come to the event and to let them know that it may be canceled after all at this point, it just made more sense to say, okay, let's just scrap it for this year. And we will resume. We'll be back to our March date in 2021, which we have a tentative date already. And we'll be back at the Mesa Convention Center again next year. So in the meantime, so the Scorched Earth Open at this point has been canceled. Will that mean for us locally here? Yes, I will still be running a few more tournaments. I don't think anything will be as grand or as opulent as Scorched Earth, but at least we'll get a couple more tournaments in once the restrictions are lifted. So we're looking at least probably, I mean, the governor officially said through May 15th, but realistically, we're probably looking through Memorial Day before we can finally get our feet on the ground and organize everything at this point.
And so, even then, some of the stores around here are still not going to open up their gameplay areas for a while.
Correct. So there's a little bit more logistics that need to get done. So hang in there. But so that gets a little more time and also gets more a little more playtesting in for Scorched Earth. So I suspect the 2021 version will be our best ever. Give us a little more prep time, get some of the tweaks out of the way. Like I said, some of this video casting, we were not going to be able to stream it, but I like the idea, talking to Scary about, if you can't stream it, still do the video and then release it as an edited piece. And then as long as we do that within, you know, the first week of the tournament, at least you get the sensation of I was there and get to kind of see what was going on. So it wouldn't be a live broadcast simply because of the internet availability at the venue. But some of that, we were testing out some new terrain. This gives us more time to test that out. All kinds of neat features that we are looking at. So now we got a little more time to practice that. So more incentive to come out to some of our smaller tournaments throughout the rest of the year once those become available. So yeah, a little bit sad, a little bit excited. Honestly, I still quite haven't processed it yet. So that we're not doing it this year, but trying to take the positive with the negative and kind of move forward. So those, and I know that the Arizona Game Fair is in the process of refunding everyone's tickets. And just be patient with them as they are working through that process as well from various remote sites. So you should be getting your money back relatively soon. All right. So much like other tournaments, still on pause or in canceled for this year. Be curious to see how the rest of the year will shape up. In the meantime, we've got our faction focus for this week. So we'll talk a little bit about Thousand Suns and Magnus and all his good friends there. We'll be talking about this right after the break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right. The cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner from drinks to dessert and use a unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the madmen of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom. All right, welcome back. As promised, our faction focus for this week is Thousand Suns, keeping with our pattern. Interesting Thousand Suns paired with Grey Knights in their Psychic Awakenings book. And got quite a few upgrades from Psychic Awakenings. Also, a very different army from what we saw close to almost a year ago. If you saw a Thousand Suns army recently versus what they saw a year ago, almost complete different. So, Ray, how would you describe Thousand Suns in terms of army playstyle?
I think a word would be psychic.
I knew you were going to say that.
It does tend to be the phase that they're known for.
I kind of think of when they talk about Chaos Marines versus their, you know, black mirror of the or dark mirror of their Imperial counterparts. These are kind of the Chaos version of Grey Knights.
Yeah, and in some ways they're similar, but they're also quite different too.
So by far the biggest change is when you saw a Thousand Suns army, say a year ago, it was pretty much Zangor spam with the dark matter crystal teleporting a blob in your face. And as we mentioned, Don's opponent in his latest game, almost all occult terminators and Rubric Marines. So curious, what's changed and what's the future for this army as they move forward?
Well, the biggest change, of course, is their Psychic Awakening. So they got 9 cults, and each one has a focus on slight little things that they do. But the thing is the using the cult rules only benefits Thousand Suns that are not Zangors or cultists, really. So that's a positive for their Terminators and their Rubrics. So you have things like, it's kind of gimmicky, but you have one where you can basically bring back models.
It's actually quite thematic to what there goes to the cult of time, the idea that they're coming from different time streams. I think it's kind of clever and does pair well against the apothecary from the Imperial counterparts.
Yeah, but the cult that really tends to... There are a couple of cults that really stick out. One of them is the Cult of Magic, which tends to get used for Supreme Command attachments. That has to do with the extra mortal wound when you're casting something that causes mortal wounds. So each cult has a psychic power, warlord trait, and their relic. So the Cult of Magic, it's kind of what it sounds like. It has to do with casting. So their relic allows a +1 to the psychic test. Their power is actually basically like a smite, but still a little different. There's the Cult of Duplicity, which is one Don has talked to me about. Their warlord trait allows you to take D3 Cult of Duplicity units, remove them, and then set them up again. So it's kind of like the Satan Shard of the Deceiver in that one. They also have a relic that allows you to get back command points, which can be pretty useful, especially for this army, because they do like to use their stratagems.
Mm-hmm.
One in particular has seen the rise of people using rubrics even outside of pure Thousand Suns, and that is the Infernal Fusillade. It's 1 CP, And what happens is if a unit of Rubrics or Scarab Occult Terminators is chosen to shoot, if they didn't move, you can use that CP to let them shoot again. Now, this is only with rapid fire weapons, so this does not work with the Soul Reaper cannon or with the Hellfire missiles and the Terminators. But if you're just talking about the Inferno Bolt rifles, the Terminators, Combi Bolter, then that can be pretty good. Especially if you're rocking a unit of 20 Rubrics. You got a unit of 20 that can shoot and have it moved. Their first shot alone is 40 shots. And for one CP, 40 more shots. That is quite...
That is a lot of shooting. And you can still use the Dark Matter Crystal to teleport a unit into position. So unit, after you've redeployed some of those other stuff, you can come back and deep strike something into somebody's face and then double chap. Oh, geez, that's a lot of shooting.
Yeah, so having that relic to recuperate your CP is useful, especially for something like that or their other new one, which is Adepts of the Immaterium, which allows you to cancel out a Peril of the Warp for one CP.
And don't forget, too, they still have Veterans of Long War, so they're going to add one to wound rolls, right?
They do have Veterans.
Okay, that's just gross. Okay. And then the basic Infernal Post Bolter is what, AP minus 2 to start with?
Yeah. Strength 4, AP minus 2.
So that will do some serious damage. Yikes.
Yep, it will. So they...
Sorry.
One thing about them is that they have access to some things that the regular Chaos Space Marines have, but they've only got a few things. They have more than Death Guard, but still not a lot. They've got the Rhino, which is one of the only ways they can really speed up their army, because this is an army of, for the most part, 5 to 6 inches. You got a few things that can go faster, but usually at that point you're talking about Zangors, which are not exactly durable. If you're running something like Zangors, you're doing them in larger numbers, so they can be a little bit more effective. Outside of that, you also, of course, have your Demon Princes with wings. They have more movement, or you've got the various units that are on discs of Zinch. Which in this case, there's the Zangors that are on the discs, and then there's the Exalted Sorcerers, and of course Airmen that can be on discs. These are faster, but in the case of everything but the Zangors, you're talking about characters, which isn't necessarily something you want to do a lot of, which is, having them out in the open. So if you're going fast, you really need to be careful. And one thing that people will do is they'll use something like a Winged Demon Prince. They'll give it warp time. They'll pop. They'll bring it forward, do some stuff with it, but always save one psychic power to warp time it back away from the firing squads.
Huh. Okay. I thought of warp timing, you're just trying to get them in front of somebody, so they have basically a 2-inch charge unexpectedly. Interesting.
That is what most armies will do with them, but not necessarily in the case of the Thousand Sons. The Demon Prince will do well in close combat, but you're not trying to get in close combat. You're trying to... Thousand Sons really do have a lot more psychic power and shooting for them. So in this case, they're more likely to jump up, cast a Mortal Wound spell. Smite's the most obvious, but Thousand Sons have a few. Cast that spell, and then bounce back. And, of course, Thousand Sons have +6 to a lot of their spells, which gives them that extra edge, too. So they've got that 6 extra inches. It comes from their...
Yeah, that'll definitely help with range.
Yeah, especially when we're talking about all psychic powers manifested. Having that 6 inches extra for, smite, just about any other offensive spell, can be very useful. Especially if you're trying to not get in close combat.
Did you say that's a weak spot for Thousand Sons?
Close combat can be. They are somewhat durable, so if it's just a basic thing of fisticuffs with troops, it's not so bad. But, if you're going up against an army that has multiple wound-causing weapons... or, decent AP weapons, then their durability starts to flounder a little bit. One thing I think a lot of people will forget, and I've had it in tournaments, is when something like the Rubric or the Scarab Occult Terminators are getting shot at by damage 1 weapons, they have a special rule, which is called All is Dust. It has two rules to it. One is for damage 1 weapons, they add one of their saving throws, both armor and invul. So a rubric has a 3+ armor save, unless it's a damage 1 weapon, in which case it's a 2+ base, and their invuln goes from a 5+ to a 4+. Terminators go from a 2+ save to a 1+ save, and from a 5+ invuln to a 4+ invuln. So
that makes them considerably durable.
Yeah, but it's fairly easy to get around it by simply, even something like a D3 weapon is going to can get around that. So, you know, if something's dealing 2 damage, they're back to their normal save. Now, another thing that can be, that is sort of useful when it comes to all this dust, is that they don't suffer from moving, shooting with heavy weapons. But not many people really run the heavy weapons. Some people will have their rubrics with the Soul Reaper cannon just because they like the ability of having a weapon that is heavy 4, strength 5, and AP minus 3. But especially with the stratagem from Ritual of the Damned, more and more focus is being put towards the Inferno Bolt Gun. So really the only, between these two units, the only heavy weapon you're really going to see is the Hellfire Missile Rack, which is, when it comes to their infantry models, it's really Thousand Sun's only way getting anything higher than a strength 4 or strength 5 weapon.
So they're relying a lot more on their smites and psychic powers to deal the heavy damage. Okay.
Yeah. And that's actually another thing that helps them out too, is they've got that special rule where, whereas with any other army, the more often you smite, the higher you have to roll. When it comes to the rubrics and all that in the Thousand Sons army, every time you're casting, it's staying at 5.
Okay. So in terms of the mission setups, and so what are, I mean, what's kind of the secondaries that work best for Thousand Sons?
Thousand Sons are an army that I think can do all right with old school, especially with some of the stratagems that allow you to get the army, some of the rubrics up close. I think they can do well with something like First Strike. With their psychic powers, Slay the Warlord is a little bit more easily doable. If you're right with durability, you can be around for Last Strike. Linebreaker can be a little bit tough just because of how slow they are, but again, if you're using the right stratagems, you can get around them. And again, with being able to, with the psychic powers, Headhunter can be useful out of the Seek and Destroy. I don't know, I'm hesitant to do the Born for Greatness with almost any army, but it's something I'd probably have to test out to get used to trying. March for Death.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those. Born for Greatness is definitely one of those. You're exposing a character, so it's going to be a little tricky. So,
yeah. Something like an Airman might work well for Born for Greatness. Have to try it out to really figure it out, though. Mark for Death can be a good one, especially because a lot of your stuff is either pumping out mortal wounds or decent AP weapons. Same thing can be said for Gangbusters and for Big Game Hunter, really. Butcher's Bill, I don't know if I would really go with, just because they're strong, but you tend to focus everything on one unit. Maybe two, but it's not always that simple. And the Reaper can be easily attainable for them, too. So really, I think what between the two, the Seek and Destroy secondaries and the Maneuver secondaries, the Thousand Sons are going to excel more at the Seek and Destroy than they will at the Maneuver ones. You're really going to need to use stratagems to help move stuff around if you want to get some of this, the Maneuver secondaries. Now, Recon can be attainable, especially if you have the right table setup. But something like Ground Control is going to be a lot harder. If you need to move a unit, you're looking at going about 4 or 5 inches at a time.
Yeah. And advancing isn't exactly your friend either at this point.
No. You, more often than anything, you're going to want to be shooting.
Okay. Explains why the Rhino Rush is a part. Maybe you mentioned Rhinos being an option as well. So
they're not
people across.
I mean, that's if you're trying to get them maneuvering around faster. I still think that if you want to get something, the units up close, you're looking at stratagems and other things to move the models outside of transports.
Now, the hardest part of Pesco Babby with Thousand Sons is their low model count, because they're pretty expensive. So I don't know how price prohibitive having that many.
So they're not as bad as they were. They are still a little on the expensive side. But talking with Don, he created a list that included, I believe it was 97 rubrics. It was 2000. It was a 2,000 point list of 2 battalions. So it's doable to still have a fairly decent amount of models on the table, even though they're a little bit more on the expensive side.
There's a lot more than I expected. So yeah, good point. Still think of, you know, Thousand Suns, you know, Rubik Marines being like 23 points a pop or something like that back, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, at one point, yeah. They were, there was a point where it was really hard to really, I mean, let's be honest, there was a time when someone saw them on the table and they said, what are you doing? You must, your list must not be that competitive.
Yeah. I think almost every army goes through that phase, but yeah, unfortunately, Thousand Suns have been, even in, I remember in 5th edition, they were like, oh, all the Cult Marines were pretty terrible, but...
Well, I mean, they never really started to stand on their own until back in late 7th edition when they finally got their own codex, basically.
Right.
In fact, it wasn't even really a codex, it was rules from the Wrath of Magdus that said that they could, that they're their own army.
Now, interesting, you haven't mentioned the Big M, so is he back to, I mean, when he first came out, he was the thing, and then it was like the Bash Brothers list with him and Mortarion, and then kind of went away. So is Magnus something worth bringing back at this point?
I would love to see Magnus on the table more often. The problem is people know what to do when he's on the table. He's got a decent amount of wounds, but I think he really needs to have a rule like what the new Gazgul model has, which says you can only deal so much damage to him at a given time. In a given phase. I mean, he's got 18 wounds, but I've seen him taken off the table turn one more times than I can count.
Right.
He's a big model, so you can't really hide him.
No, you can't hide him, both as a character or just even on the terrain. So, yeah, it's in the same boat. I've seen him just eviscerated turn one. I'm like, wow, that was a big chunk. And in other games where I've seen him linger, he's, you know, such a force multiplier, just like, oh god, okay.
Yeah. So I think what he needs is, he needs a rule like Gazgul's, but not Gazgul's says four, which makes sense. It's you can kill him on one turn, but that's four in each phase totaling up, which is how many wounds he's got. So I think Magnus should have the same thing, but in his case it would be six. So the same rules apply. You can take him out in turn one, but you have to deal a third of his damage in each of the three phases to each.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see if they make that change, because it seems that would be a good fix across the board for all the larger character models.
I mean, especially some of the bigger ones. You know, I honestly would expect them to do something similar for Gilliman, too. It makes sense. You have these big characters that are big points, but you can take them out in one good shooting phase.
Which doesn't quite fit. You know what you expect them to do. So, but all right. Talked about secondaries, talk about where they are now. So, curious thing with Thousand Suns at this point, obviously making their way up the ranks on the competitive armies. What would say probably bad matchups for them?
So first off, high model count. Another thing is you've got an army that can, that's good at denying psychic powers. You know, something like Grey Knights or another list that just has enough psychers for the denials. You can start neutering them really quick when it comes to that. Higher maneuverability, especially if we're talking about just straight up playing to the objective, can make it harder. And of course, getting them into close combat. If you can wrap around a unit of rubrics and get them stuck to close combat, the aspiring sorcerer has a force staff, and that's about all they got as far as any kind of weaponry goes. Other than that, it's just basic close combat, and they don't really excel at that because they've got no special. It's AP 0, 1 damage, strength 4. Now, if we're talking the...
All right, that is not that special.
If we're talking the Scarab Cult Terminators, they are a little stronger in that the, again, sorcerer in the unit has the force staff, and the rest of the unit each has swords, power swords, basically. So they're a little bit better off. But again, the staff, a lot of the times, ends up doing more of the work than anything else. So getting them stuck in close combat is... And again, it takes away their ability to shoot, because the sorcerer in the rubric squad has a pistol, but that's it. They don't. The rest of the unit doesn't have... The Terminator squad doesn't have any kind of pistols. So when they're stuck in close combat, that's all they're doing is... stuck in close combat. And the only other option that you can give them, these units, is, especially the rubrics, is the Icon of Flame, which is pretty useless. No, the chances of chances of you rolling a 6 are pretty, you know, 1 in 6, I'm sorry. But when you need to roll that 6 for that, you never get it. I've tried running lists and using it, and in whole tournaments, I've not had it work once.
Yeah, rolling sixes is not exactly a viable strategy. So
save your sixes for when you're getting charged, because the one time it can be useful for you to, for them, your opponent to try to get in close combat is when you get enough sixes and you take them, you take out models when they don't expect you. It's also why this is a personal opinion. I think it's useful for there to be one or two Warp Flamer squads or Warp Flamer units inside. So if you do get charged, it's useful for having these Flamer weapons because they're basically Flamer versions of the same weapons that they have in their Bolter.
Still that strength 4, AP minus 2. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. It's a strength 4, minus 2, 1 damage, assault D6. And since they're flamers, you don't have to worry about rolling sixes to hit. Well, all you gotta do is figure out how many dice you're gonna be rolling for damage.
That's pretty handy. So, pretty cool. All right. Anything else you want to add about Thousand Suns?
Well, one other thing I do want to point out is, while this is a lot of talk about rolling them as monoliths, one of the nice things that we're getting out of the Psychic Awakening book is when it comes to the Chaos factions, all their extras only come from them being detachments, not whole armies like what we see with the Imperial Space Marine chapters. So, whereas getting all the special rules for Iron Hands comes from your whole army being Iron Hands, all the special stuff for Thousand Suns only comes from you having a detachment of Thousand Suns. It's also important to point out the fact that when it comes to some of these stratagems, they don't specify that they have to be for the army. So people who are running...
That is quite handy.
Yeah. People who are running regular Chaos Space Marines who have rubric units are still able to use the stratagem that allows them to shoot twice.
That sounds pretty handy right off the bat. So... And this also gives them a lot of options. One option we didn't talk about today, too, which I kind of caught me off guard and when we were reading through the doing some research here, there's also a fair amount of demons in mixed into the codex. So you can still be mono Thousand Suns and still have a wide variety of horrors still in your list, which also provide a lot of shooting.
Right. So to do that and stay Thousand Suns, you have to summon them. You can't just have them in your list. That's important. Okay. Because they don't have them because of the keywords. That's what seen in this and in the Death Guard book too, is the demons outside of the Demon Princes, because they're kind of considered the Space Marines turned into demons. The demon is the horrors, the flamers, all that. The only way you can have them in your list in an army and it still be considered mono Thousand Suns is if you summon. So you're saving the points.
Right. And then the one model I never hear of is this crazy monster. I thought it was a Tyranid the first time I saw it. Is the, forget the name Vortex right here, Butalith Vortex Beast. Anybody even using that? Is there any use for that at this point?
I have tried using it. I think if used right, it'll be okay, but it's kind of nothing too special. It's very gimmicky. So you're looking at a model, at its fastest, is only movement 8. It's got a 4+ save, 5+ invuln, and it regains 1 wound, which is kind of nice. But what you're getting out, what you're trying to do with this is either get it into melee, if you're lucky enough, because it's, you know, it's melee weapons are strength 7, AP minus 1 or minus 2, but it's that warp vortex that people are really going to go for, which is used during the shooting phase, and you can either pick one or roll and then possibly roll a second time after resolving it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But for it to go off, you have to roll for it to go off.
Oh, geez. Okay. Never mind.
So let's say you decide to pick one. Where you are on wound determines how easy it is for it to go off. So if let's say it's turn one, it's got all of its wounds. You pick one, you have to roll 2+. Okay, that's easy. But once it's down to half, you're only going to get the vortex power to go off half the time. Now, once it's down to...
Yeah, and still. I'm saying there's no way to heal that thing back up again. So
yeah, you don't really. I mean, outside of the fact that it regains one wound every turn, there's nothing you can do to help it. There's also the fact once it's down to 7 wounds, the vortex power's ranges are doubled, which is kind of nice. But every time you fail to get off, you're also dealing another wound to it.
Ooh, wow. Okay, gimmicky doesn't begin to describe this thing then. Okay.
It's one of those things, it's it's neat that they decided to throw it in, but especially back around the, you know, the beginning of 8th edition, it kind of, this and the Zangors kind of turned Thousand Suns into, it almost looked like you were trying to play AOS in 40K.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that a few times from opponents, so, okay. So glad to see that the rubrics are back to, you know, Thousand Suns we remember. So pretty cool. All right. So if you've had any experiences with Thousand Suns or have any additional questions for us, hit us up on our Facebook page. Definitely love to answer those. Also, if you have any requests for next week's faction focus, Ray, what are we up to next at this point? Are we back to Xenos?
Yeah, we're up to Xenos.
All right. So if there's a Xenos faction you'd like us to review for faction focus, hit us up on our Facebook page as well. So we'll be more than happy to talk about that. So in the meantime, post a few more things on our Facebook page. Hopefully get some more news regarding these White Dwarf deliveries. I just noticed that the Games Workshop community page mentioned that they'll be previewing some of the new Engine War models and rules for this coming week. So look for more of our commentary on that on Facebook as well as next week's episode. So with that, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.